It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? It's a neighborly day in this beauty wood.
Several generations of kids have grown up watching Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, which premiered on public TV in 1968 and is now the longest-running kid show on network TV. One of Fred Rogers' sweaters is on permanent display in the Smithsonian's Popular Culture Collection. Adults sometimes find the show remarkably low-key, but their children who watch get totally involved with Mr. Rogers as he talks and sings to them. For Fred Rogers, children's TV is more than a job. It's a calling, one which he continued with even after he was ordained as a minister in the United Presbyterian Church. In 1984, I asked Fred Rogers what he was like as a child.
I was an only child. I had to make up a lot of my friends myself, and I think that was the beginning of the whole neighborhood of make-believe. I had a very rich fantasy life.
What were the friends that you had imagined?
I didn't imagine them. I had puppets, and so I would play with the puppets. And I can't remember their exact forms, but I knew that they were important to me. I think that all of the puppets in the neighborhood of make-believe are facets of who I am.
Was there somebody in your life who was the kind of figure for you, like you've become to so many children, who would, you know, like reassure you and, you know, want to discuss things with you? Of course, you can't actually step out of the TV and discuss it with all the kids, but you offer that to them. Was there someone like that for you?
I guess the closest person was my grandfather, Mr. McFeely. And, of course, we've named the Speedy Delivery Man for him. We called him Ding Dong because he taught us that childhood rhyme, Ding Dong Bell, Pussy in the Well. And everybody called him Ding Dong. He was the kind of person who would really support your strivings for autonomy. And while my parents and my grandmother were naturally very concerned about my health and hazards around, he was the kind of person who, when I would walk on one of his stone walls, for instance, they would say, "Better get down." Ding Dong would say, "Ah, let the kid walk on the wall. He's got to learn to do things for himself."
What were the things that really scared you when you were a child?
I think the most scary thing was being alone and thinking that maybe nobody would come to get me. And I think that beginning school was tough for me. That's probably why I've done so much work for children in this area. I think also I was frightened of the doctor, and that's probably why I've made all those videotapes about helping children know about what hospitalization is like before they go. Probably why I wrote that song, "I Like to Be Told." Because I did. I liked to be told about things before I had to go do them.
Did you like scary movies or books?
I can't remember.
Did you go to the movies a lot?
I would go to the movies. It's hard for me to remember. I remember a couple movies that I liked. Shirley Temple. And I liked those kinds of stories that, she would always come out okay at the end. And I met Shirley Temple Black not too long ago, and I just sat beside her in awe. And I said, it was interesting because the first thing I said to her was, "You were one of my favorite people." She said, "Were?" That was the first thing she said. And that really put me back. I expected her to say something about, I'm really glad that I could have been part of your childhood. But all she said was, "Were? I was one of your favorite people." Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it is. Did she diminish in your esteem after saying that?
A little bit. But I think that so many people you put on pedestals when you see them from afar, and it's probably just not fair to expect them to be as wonderful as you thought they would be when you met them.
What about when you were a teenager? Was that an uncomfortable experience, or did you feel like you fit in with everybody in high school, which is, I think, a pretty traumatic time for a lot of people when they're growing up?
It sure is. I think that teenage years are probably uncomfortable for everybody. It's just that some seem to be able to carry it off with more elan than others. But it was tough for me at the beginning. And then I made a couple friends who found out that the core of me was okay. And one of them was the president or the head of the football team. He later became my best friend in high school. And we've carried on that friendship for a long, long time. As a matter of fact, his daughter's getting married next week in La Trobe, and we're all part of that wedding together. But that's a long, long time ago. We graduated in 46. But it was after the beginning of that friendship that I was more accepted in school. Then I became the editor of the yearbook, and finally the president of the student council by the end of high school. But I was a very shy person going into high school.
What did you think you were going to be when you got out of school and started a professional career?
I thought I was going to be a diplomat, and was thinking about going to a school for diplomacy. And then I changed my mind, and this was during college. I wanted to be a minister, and was all set to go to seminary after college. But I saw this thing called television, and I saw people throwing pies in each other's faces and all kinds of demeaning behavior. And I thought, I would really like to try my hand at that and see what I could do. And so instead of going to the seminary after graduation, I got a job at NBC in New York and went there for 2 years before joining educational television.
What you... Worked on the Hit Parade and the Kate Smith Hour, I think.
Mm-hmm, the Voice of Firestone, and all of those programs.
It surprises me, I think, that you left for a fledgling station, a brand new station in educational television, which was also new. It sounds like it was very risky to do that. Why did you make that switch?
I don't know. Pittsburgh was closer to where I grew up. Maybe I wanted to, I had just gotten married in New York, and maybe I had wanted to go back. I'm not sure that's so. I think that it had to do with wanting to work with children, because every day that I had off at NBC, I would go and visit a daycare center or an orphanage or a hospital that cared for children. And I cannot tell you why. I'm sure it had very deep roots, but when I got to Pittsburgh and there were only three or four of us working at QED then, we weren't even on the air. This was in November of 53, and we didn't go on the air until April of 54, 30 years ago. One of the secretaries and I did a children's program together because nobody else wanted to do a children's program. But we were doing all of these other things as well. Each of us had a salary of $75 a week. And out of our own pockets, we bought all of the props for the program. And we called the program the Children's Corner. And it was on an hour every day. And I expected that I would play the organ for the hostess to sing. She would introduce all of the films which I, as the producer, would get from all over the country. They had to be free, because we didn't have any budget. Well, I didn't realize it, but those films were very brittle at times. And, of course, everything was live, and we'd be on the air, and here would be a film showing, and it would break. We'd have to fill with something. And so the night before we went on the air, Mrs. Dorothy Daniel, who was the general manager of the station, gave me a little tiger puppet. So I called him Daniel for her. And when the first film broke, I just poked the puppet through, and this was just a very fanciful set with drawings on it. And I just poked him through, and it happened to be a clock where I poked him through. And he just said,
It's 5:02, and Columbus discovered America in 1492.
And that was the first thing that I ever said through puppetry on the air.
Wow.
But I just wanted you to know that necessity there was the mother of that invention, because it hadn't been planned. And so much that is spontaneous is what can be truly inspired. And I feel that all that I've done that's been really helpful and good has been inspired.
You went back to the seminary after doing children's programming for a while, right?
Well, I started with the station, and after we got that children's program going, it got to be so busy for us that the secretary and I both gave up all of our other duties to do the children's corner. As it got moving, the second year, I decided I would go to the seminary, so I went on my lunch hour and took courses just one at a time, never expecting that I would graduate. It took me 8 years, and I finally graduated and was ordained a minister in the Presbyterian Church.
Obviously, you're very religious, but I don't think it's not a denominational program, and I'm sure that's intentional on your part.
It's far from denominational and far from overtly religious. The last thing in the world that I would want to do would be something that's exclusive. I would hate to think that a child would feel excluded from the neighborhood by something that I said and did.
Well, what do you think about television and children? A lot of parents don't want their kids to watch TV. And I know you're really sensitive about how media affects children. You do a TV show that's, I think, unlike any others. Do you think that television is necessarily good or necessarily bad for kids?
I think that a lot of it has to do with what the child is bringing to the television experience. That the drama within that child is going to determine how he or she will see a certain thing. So many people have talked about our work with such a simple thing as helping children understand that they can't go down the bathtub drain. And you know, I sing that song, "You can never go down, can never go down, can never go down the drain." Well, if a child is very concerned about the loud rush of the flush of either the bathtub or the toilet, and comes to the neighborhood on a day when I am talking about that, that will be highly dramatic for that child. That child will focus in on what I'm talking about and showing, and much more than if there were some very loud cartoon or all kinds of fancy production going on. And so it's the inner drama of the viewer and the listener that means so much in communication. You know, who's listening to us right now? What are their concerns? What are they worried about? What gives them joy? I'd love to know, because I think that radio and television and these things are very personal media. The reason that I have worked all these years with children and with parents is that I want to know at least the general things that people are concerned about so that I can speak to them and dramatize them as creatively as I know how.
Something that you really do is talk about what kids are scared of instead of just doing the clown bit. You know, having a clown is going to entertain them. Why do you focus on that? Because like a lot of your songs, and sometimes on the show too, it's about what's making kids nervous. It's not an attempt to just like entertain them and make them laugh, you know?
I'd like them to know that there are things inside them that are okay to talk about. And they might feel anxious about them. And I feel that somebody needs to tell them that it's all right to talk about what they're scared of, what makes them angry, what makes them sad, what makes them happy. They should know that there is a full array of emotions in life, and all of them are fine. It's what we do with them that matters. And I like to think that the neighborhood is a kind of smorgasbord of ways to deal with how we feel. For me, it was always music and puppets. That's the way I dealt with how I felt. For others, it might be dance or welding or building with blocks. Or I could go on for a half an hour about all of the ways that we offer kids. We show them so many ways of healthy sublimation that I like to think that is a major part of what we do.
Can I just ask you one more thing before we go? You know how a lot of adults always say, God, I wish I was a child again. Do you ever wish you were 5 or 10 or 12?
Yes, but I'd like to be that with what I know now. And I think that I'd like that because there are a good many significant people in my life that I have lost through death, and I'd like to be able to talk with them again and tell them some things that I wasn't able to tell them then. In fact, I'd like to be able to tell them you are special.
Fred Rogers recorded in 1984, and that concludes Fresh Air series on TV. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Today's program on children's TV was produced by Anne Marie Baldonado with Megan Howell. Our engineer is Audrey Bentham. I'm Terry Gross.